I said, hold on, I'm eating candy.
I had already typed it and was hitting enter before you even finished saying it.
I'm Grumpy Dungeon Christopher, and I'll be muted for 2 minutes while I eat my candy, and Jay will fill in.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be eating that candy literally for the next month, because that's what you do. You know, you steal your child's Halloween candy and devour it for a month afterwards. I should know, because my parents always did that to me, or at least my dad did.
At least should you not?
He didn't steal the chocolate, so that was good.
This is the truth. My daughter gave me the candy that I could eat.
She gave you the candy that you could eat. What candy can't you eat?
So what she did is she kind of went through and sorted through all her candy. And, you know, we looked at it, made sure there was no, like, fentanyl or D20 sets, and hid it in the Snicker bars.
Yeah, that's important. And, you can't have your kids starting D&D at that age.
Yeah, definitely not. And she's very sweet, and she went, Mommy, Daddy, if you want to take the candies that you'd like, you can fill up your own buckets. And she gave us a little McDonald's buckets that we collected. And we just filled up all the candies that we wanted, and she was very happy. And I got 2 Starbursts left.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not that much left. I mean, this is only a week after. Yeah. I'm sure you have. Your diabetes is complaining right now.
So anyways, D&D news. Is there anything fun or excited happening? Yes.
Well, I am Grumpy Dungeon Master Jay, and that's Grumpy Dungeon Master Christopher, who already introduced himself. And this is the Grumpy Dungeon Master Podcast, where we bitch and complain about Wizards of the Coast.
All things tabletop related.
I mean, truthfully, we are all things tabletop related, but we primarily run and play Dungeons and Dragons at this point in our old ass lives. So
something,
that's mostly
something,
what
Paizo, something, something.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Bruce. No, Bruce is not here. I'm just shouting out to him.
So I not much has happened. There's one piece of D&D news. Everyone's just waiting for Dragonlance to come out. A few things about the new Dragonlance classes and feats and stuff from the Dragonlance release were put on the D&D YouTube. But I'm not want to cover that until I have them in front of me and actually can read them. And
yeah, because we had talked about the stuff when they were in the UA like six months ago or whatever it was.
I did see a cool picture online, though. That's the guy took all 7 of the core rule books right now and created one giant tome of all of them. Harkening back to your idea where you want to make a giant, like, 7,000-page book about Waterdeep.
I don't know why you keep getting that idea. I'm talking 250 pages. I have never said anything more than about that.
And this book is at least 6 inches thick with all the core rulebook data in there and all that. And it's definitely bound together somehow.
Do you have a link to this thing? I would love to see what you're talking about.
Sure, I'll put it in our general chat in Discord.
Okay. So, and not actually disconnect yourself from there.
Then the audience doesn't have to know that.
Wow. Okay, so that looks like a holy Bible almost. Like, that's huge. What is this again? What is in
all
that?
All 7 of the core rule books.
Okay, so from first edition all the way through 5th edition, including probably, I guess, white box and
no, I think he means the player's handbook, the Dungeon Master Guide, Xanathar's, and all them.
Oh, okay, so it's all 5e. It's just all of the... I gotcha. It's not the campaigns. It's all the good books.
Yeah, all the content books.
Yeah. Quite a book. Honestly, that was... Yeah, that's quite a hell of a book. I'll have to try to remember to share that.
The most commented or the most liked comment was, all right, flip to page 25. Which page 25?
Yeah, exactly. Page 25 of the player's handbook, page 25 of Volos, page 25 of Morden Cadence 2. Like, which one?
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, it's been a very quiet week. I started the new Waterdeep Dragon, not Waterdeep Dragonhide, the Waterdeep Fiendish Summer homebrew campaign thing that I'm running.
Yep.
I had a bunch of new viewers per the Twitch details that I get. And I think we averaged like 8 viewers for the night, which is better than normal.
Okay.
So if you want to watch, you can go to our Twitch channel, watch it at any time. I got to upload it to YouTube. Just YouTube is very clunky to work with. It's kind of odd.
Sometimes, yeah. Uploading video, yeah, like the whole process you have to go through. I just want to upload a video and give it a title. I don't really need all this other shit.
Right. But overall, it was a lot of fun. I was able to see it all, but one of the major storylines I want to talk about, or I want to run for them in the first session, and I'll introduce the last major storyline element in the beginning of the second session. It went great. There are a lot of key things kind of got together, and just luck of the dice kind of happened. So one of the things that happened in this campaign setting is that the Church of Illustrae has been absolutely destroyed, and all the people that were in there were murdered. And this was done because when I ran Waterdeep Dragon Heist,
my bunch of
murder hobo players decided to go into there because I gave them the instructions to kill the high priestess in there from Lolth to my drow player. And they decided the best course of action was to just murder everybody. So that's like the big piece of news that's out there, on top of the fact that the same party found the Horde of the Dragons, and the money's now been given back to the city. So the city is celebrating because of that, but also mourning the fact that all these people got killed. So there's this very big, heavy anti-drow resistance kind of growing, or sentiment growing.
Sure, yeah.
So I had the players roll for a random encounter because they were just kind of like blowing through the content that I played for them. And my wife, who's playing another drow character, rolls a D100 for the location that they're in and pulls up an angry mob. And I was like, okay, this is the first perfect time to introduce the anti-drowness of the campaign. So the angry mob was there. I didn't want it to be an actual encounter. So I had them just outside, protesting outside of the Yawning Portal, because it's a very, like, you know, foot traffic-y area.
Right.
You know, kind of like PETA in Virginia Beach. Just they pick all the major intersections, just stand there and go, don't eat meat, but you're outside of KFC.
Yep.
I'm getting mixed signals here. So when they saw her, they basically, the angry mob threw fruit and, you know, rotten fruit and vegetables at my wife, and a couple of them hit and did one bludgeoning damage, but that was it. It was done. So when they're in there, they're talking to Durin, the owner of the Yawning Portal. He gives them the next quest for them to kind of compete. He's, you know, missing some items that aren't showing up, so he wants them to investigate, since they did such a good job handling some thugs yesterday. And he thinks that if anything bad happens, they are very trustworthy. At least he thinks they're trustworthy. So they decide to basically take up his quest and go investigate his missing shipments. So my wife, the ever clever person that she is, decides to use her disguise kit to disguise her drowness and paint herself up to be a high elf. Really cool. So she rolls her disguise check, gets like an 18. Really good roll. Yeah. So cool. She goes out there, and this angry mob is 20 commoners and 3 thugs. Thugs have +0 to their intelligence, wisdom, charisma.
Right, they're very basic.
Very basic kind of creature. I rolled a 20, a 19, and a 7 on their perception checks.
I probably would have gone just with a passive, honestly, but
no, they were kind of leading the crowd, and I felt like an active check was good for them, but not for the crowd. The crowd didn't notice. So they come out, and these three thugs see her, and then they point her out, and they yell at her again, and then they kind of rush over to kind of corner her off so she can get pelted by a bunch of
fruits
and vegetables again. So I do all 20 rolls for the fruits and vegetables.
So what vegetables were they throwing? Was it cabbage or potatoes?
Rotten potatoes, rotten tomatoes, apple.
All right, tomatoes and are fruits. So.
Whatever. one of the rolls of the 20 was a critical hit. Okay. And you know, when you have an unarmed attack, or in this case, a improvised weapon, it was only doing one damage. So I can't double the 1 to 2. So I thought up right then and there, it's going to be super creative if I have one of those vegetables actually be a rock. So she got hit by a 1d4 plus one rock instead of just taking one damage from a vegetable.
I mean, that's sort of the thing that people always worry about.
Yeah.
For real, like when there's rioting going on or whatever, and they're throwing milkshakes at people, the concern is that there's like cement inside of them, or rocks or other things. And it, yeah. So yeah, sticking a rock inside a tomato. Yeah, I could see that.
So she got hit for max damage with a rock. And now she's bloodied from the previous assault and this huge assault and the rock that hit her. The rest of the group is kind of doing their things to kind of disperse the crowd. And the rock hits her. Now I'm waiting for these murder hobos to leap into action.
You keep expecting this all of a sudden to go very Boston Massacre.
Well, none of them did. My wife actually charmed one of the thugs, okay? And because they weren't fighting with her, okay? The way the spell reads, that, you know, as long as it's a creature, if the creature is fighting you, then they have advantage on the roll. But since they weren't fighting her, just hostile to her, but they weren't fighting her, he didn't have advantage on the roll. So he failed. And she's like, hey, man, can you help me out? Can you convince your friends not to do this anymore? And at that time, one of the other players used his precipitation to make the other thug soil himself. So now I have one thug that wants to leave, one that's still riling them up, and one that's charmed. So I have the thug that's charmed make a persuasion check. I get with the other thug, and the thug that's charmed, I rolled a 20 on his persuasion. Again, that's a nat 20. There's no modifiers to these guys.
Yeah.
And so the other guy, I roll for him to see if he's going to accept it. And I mean, the best that can happen is a tie. And he gets like a 7. So they're like, yeah, this is not fun anymore. Let's get out of here. And they all just like, you know, walk off the screen, and all the other commoners scatter because one of the other players was shouting for guards. But I was very proud that the group didn't go all murder hobo-y on everybody.
Players would have.
There was a previous fight, and I forgot to bring this up with the new player, but I think everyone else, all my returning players, knew of the code legal for Waterdeep. And so part of the code legal of Waterdeep is that you can't just go around being murder hobos. You'll get arrested and thrown in jail and possibly sentenced to death.
Yeah.
So when the first fight happens, like one of the players is like, yeah, I'm going to run over there and non-lethally knock this, you know, hit this guy with my maul. And the new player's like, he walks over and he's like, yeah, I'm going to hit that guy with my long sword. Oh, that's a crit. I mean, non-lethally. I was like, nope, I'm already putting in the damage. So I gotta reinforce that the code legal is going to be there, because it is central to running anything in Waterdeep. You can't have people just running around brandishing weapons and stuff like that.
Honestly, yeah, like that's an interesting kind of topic in general, is cities and their systems of law, because you know, if you go through all of the text from the beginning of D&D till now, Forgotten Realms or any setting, you're never going to find what is the system of laws in every city, because it's just not going to exist. Like there might be a little, you know, corner in some book that's got some of the basic laws of, say, Waterdeep or wherever. So when players do things that are immoral, you as the DM are just sort of going to have to figure it out. You know, yeah. Murder is an obvious one. Theft is an obvious one, but then not every city might have, you know, they may not have the same laws for possession of ownership. That, you know, like Waterdeep's might be the same as what we kind of have here in America, but some other city might be more of what they have in Europe and so forth.
Yeah. So the code legal for Waterdeep is just a single page handout, and it's great in its simplicity. It's very detailed with, like, you know, if you do X, Y will happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, assuming you get caught.
Yeah.
So the first section at the top just kind of outlines, like, the punishments for crime. So you have, like, death, exile, flogging, hard labor, damages, fines, imprisonment, edict. And then they have even, like, it could be for, like, years or summers, or, you know, damages go to, like, the injured party or victim's kin, et cetera, et cetera. And then it has, like, the four main sections, which is the crimes against lords, officials, and nobles, crimes against the city, crimes against the gods, and crimes against the citizens. All basically, like, you murder a citizen without justification, you get death or hard labor up to 10 years, and damages up to 1,000 gold paid to the victim's kin. Whereas if you murder a lord, official, or noble, you're just put to death. So,
and hopefully you know which one you're killing at the time.
Well, that's the thing. You know, if you cast Fireball on a crowd, which is, you know, how Waterdeep starts, there's a lot of different victims there. You know, so it could be that, you know, you get a noble with a fireball and he dies, you know.
Yeah.
So now you have, like, 17 counts of, you know, murder against you, and that one with the noble's death. So maybe you get hard labor for a couple decades and then they kill you. You know, who knows? But it's very nice. It's very clean and efficient. So if you are looking for a good basis for how to handle crime and punishment, look up the Waterdeep Code Legal. It works well. I'm going to be adding to the Code Legal probably next session. I'll be adding to it. I've already dropped the hint that there is the Masked Lords of Waterdeep, and the Ruling Council has decided on changes that were going to be happening for crimes against the city. They're going to be adding some more crimes to that. And, you know, tune in to find out what they are, but they're very interesting. And they take place from, like, what my group did when they played Dragon Heist and the events that happened during Dragon Heist. So it'll be very interesting to see how it kind of goes through. And I'm being vague because I know they'll listen and they'll find out on Saturday.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting you'd bring this up. My players haven't had to deal with it yet, but at some point in the current campaign, they're going to end up in an area where the set of laws are very different than what they're used to. Like, yeah, they're in very sort of medieval society, and for the most part, like, I just kind of make the laws very generalized, very basic, and it's kind of what you would expect. But I don't want to say too much because they haven't gotten there, but let's just say the set of laws are incredibly different. Yeah, murder still will not be allowed, but there's a lot of other laws tacked on top that they're not going to be expecting.
No, no, no. You're not getting flogged because you were because you stole from the store. You're getting flogged because you were caught stealing from the store.
There's yeah.
Difference.
Yeah, the rule of Nang. when you include magic into a game world, those are laws that have to be looked at as well. Like charming a person. What's the legality of that?
So actually it says assaulting or impersonating an official or noble, flogging, imprisonment up to a 10-day, and a fine of 500 gold.
Yeah, but what? That's
using magic to influence a lord without consent, imprisonment up to a year, and fine or damages up to 1,000 gold. Using magic to influence an official without consent, fine or damage up to 1,000 gold, and edict.
So there you go.
So, yeah, they kind of thought of everything in this little thing. Like I said, it's really interesting. And the other part of it, too, is that, like, you could... Let's say you were a shop owner and you were charming people and you're stealing from them that way. And you get, you know, caught. Okay. So you're, you know, using magic to influence a citizen without consent. You get fined and damages up to 1,000 gold pieces and an edict.
Or theft on top of that.
Maybe. But then they have the edict. The edict, you know, can have a couple other things on there, like, you know, you're kicked out of your guild, so now you're not a part of the merchant's guild in Waterdeep, so now no one will give you supplies anymore because you don't have the proper paperwork to buy supplies.
Right, you can't do business, not legally at least.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, there's criminal gangs who can join then, I guess.
Well, I mean, you can always find stuff in the black market, so.
That's Skullport, and we're not going there.
Yeah, that's a whole other set of laws, to say the least.
I told you, man, the book would be too big.
Once again, it's a separate book.
No, it's the same book. So, yeah. I know, I'm having a lot of fun with this, and I'm looking forward to what they kind of do and the crazy stuff that they're going to get into. It's going to be a lot more open world. I do have the through-line stories that they have to do, but it really doesn't kick off for a little while. So, yeah. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I got to run my own campaign this past weekend.
Was it the Street Fighter one?
No, I haven't run that. Not yet. I'm sure you're waiting for me to run some Street Fighter.
I am. I want to be Dalzim.
You can't play. Well, I guess you technically could play Dalzim.
Yoga Fire.
Like, I have all the stats. You know, all the stats for most of the main characters are in the book. So
he's got a reach of 15 feet for his unarmed strikes.
Something like that. It's a different system, however.
Fireballs.
Yeah, like that's I've been trying to sort of. I'm at the midpoint of my campaign. Like all the players are level 10, and I wanted to take some time off. And I keep trying to get to that final end point of the midway point, and I can't seem to manage that. Like, I was wrapping it up last game session, and my players got like one thing done. So then I was going to wrap it up yesterday or whatever day I ran it, Friday. And we managed to get two things done.
Ooh. But
I know. Like, they're in the middle of a war, and I can't rush that. Like, I can't just say, oh, you can't just storyboard this shit. You know, they're in the middle of it. They're a major portion of it. So I have to run through the steps to get them where I want them to go.
Just pull a Tolkien. You'll be fine.
Yeah. So I think next time I run, I'll actually be able to get them there. There's only a couple more things they have to do, so here's hoping.
Just let them find a box of invisibility potions, have them all drink them, and that way you can take a nap under a tree while the five armies clash and murder each other.
Yeah. I mean, they've been pulling some creative ideas. They know they need to basically get to the leaders of the army, of the opposing army, but that's not a simple thing. They're holed up in a castle. There's a lot of physical things within the way, you know, and they keep trying to throw ideas at me. They're tossing things, and I hate shutting them down, but I'm trying to kind of be realistic with it. You know, if they try some of the things they're talking about, they will probably get killed. You don't just teleport into a castle with 1,000 troops or however many in there and expect to live, you know?
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to sort of shut your players down for, you know, health of the campaign, I guess.
No, don't go down that street. It will kill you. All right, we're going to go down the street anyways. A box falls from the ceiling and smashes down the ground, blocking your way. That's just difficult terrain, guys. Let's keep going. No. Yeah.
I mean, look, if they had decided, you know, if all of them had agreed and decided that they were going to get a teleportation into the place, I would have let them.
Yeah.
And maybe they could escape. Maybe. But anyway.
A man walks by with a giant flashing sign that says, "This way, stupid.
This
do
way.
Do you go that way or do you go the other way?"
Yep. Got to hit him with the clue by four occasionally. So one of the things that they had to deal with was killing a whole bunch of stone giants. So they get into a fight with six stone giants, and they have not necessarily the drop, but, you know, the stone giants are all huddled around sort of a fire pit. You know, a few of them are chatting, a few of them are sleeping, and the players are trying to create a distraction. So one of the players has the Deck of Illusions. Now, are you familiar with this item?
No.
Okay, so the Deck of Illusions is the best, worst magic item in 5e. It is, the reason I say that is because it is an item that does not have proper rules for it.
Okay.
All right, so let me read through this and then I'll explain exactly what happened, and then I want to get your take on it. So the deck, the deck of illusions, this box contains a set of parchment cards. Full deck has 34 cards. Deck found as treasure is usually missing 1d20 minus one cards. The magic of the deck functions only if cards are drawn at random. You can use an action to draw a card at random from the deck and throw it to the ground at a point within 30 feet of you. An illusion of one or more creature forms over the thrown card and remains until dispelled. An illusionary creature appears real, of the appropriate size, and behaves as if it were a real creature, as presented in the Monster Manual, except that it can do no harm. While you're within 120 feet of the illusory creature and can see it, you can use an action to move it magically anywhere within 30 feet of its card. Any physical interaction with the illusory creature reveals it to be an illusion, because objects pass through it. Someone who uses an action to visually inspect the creature identifies it as illusory with a successful DC 15 investigation check. The illusion lasts until its card is moved or the illusion is dispelled. When the illusion ends, the image of the card on its card disappears and it can't be used again. That's the extent of the rules of it.
Okay.
And illusions in general are very, very iffy in Dungeons and Dragons, and they always have been. How is a creature going to react when one of these is pulled? Let me throw an example at you, because it says if you use an action to inspect a creature, if you roll high enough, you notice it's an illusion. But if I pull the Ace of Hearts, which is a red dragon, and it just appears in front of these guys, are they going to waste time using an action, or are they going to run away? And because the only rules that it has is that they can use an action to inspect it. So as a new dungeon master is probably just going to have them not run away from a red dragon. It's probably just going to have them use actions to inspect this thing.
So I guess the issue with this magic item is, my understanding of illusions is that when you cast an illusion spell, I think a minor and major illusion state this, I'm double checking. It doesn't make any noise. Like, you can make an illusory noise, okay? Or you can make an illusion, like, you know, a pile of gold appears.
Yeah, and this one says it acts and appears to be real, but it says nothing at all about sound.
Right. So if it sounds like a dragon, okay. Is it an ancient red or is it red?
It just says red dragon. Just red dragon.
All right. So I guess it's up to you as the DM to say what kind of dragon it is. Okay. If it's an adult red dragon, does frightful presence still work?
Yeah, and these are all questions that have no answer at all within the deck of illusions.
I mean, if the illusion is something less spectacular, I think you have a druid. Ooh. A knight and four guards.
Okay, so when my player pulled for the Stolen Giants, the first one he pulled was a kobold, and I just played it off as if they actually never even noticed it. The second one he pulled was an orc. I don't have orcs in my setting, so I said it's a hobgoblin. So I guess his deck has two hobgoblins. Whatever. They are in the army with a whole bunch of hobgoblins. Those stone giants were, so they mostly just ignored him. And then he pulled a third one, and the third one was a lich.
Okay.
So, you know, at this case, you're dealing with a very powerful undead, although they probably wouldn't have known that. They would just see an undead. You don't know it's a lich right off the bat.
Okay.
So what I had them do was two of them actively started kind of going after it. They weren't running after it, but they started heading in its direction because this fucking undead just showed up in their camp. That's a little weird, but they are still stone giants, so they're not necessarily afraid of a 6-foot tall undead. They ended up the player used his turn a couple of rounds to move it like 30 up to total of 90 feet. So like three rounds in a row, he moved it away and they just sort of followed it, which was enough of a distraction, which is what they were looking for, to sort of separate the giants.
That seemed to work.
Yeah, that's like, I felt that was the best, because stone giants have an intelligence of 10. Like, they're not super smart. They're I think their wisdom's also 10 or 11. Like, it's not real high. If it had been like a storm giant or something, it would have been, I probably would have played that differently.
Right. No, it sounds like you did it right. You just have to figure out what kind of red dragon you're going to be running.
Yeah.
I don't think there is just a red dragon. They're all.
No, there is no red dragon. Yeah, there's ages to them. They're all aged.
Dragons.
Yeah, like you've got.
Yeah, wormling, young, adult, or ancient.
Yep. And and mind you, I make variants of red dragons too. Like if I think an adult red dragon is too hard for my party, but I still want the face one, I'll just sort of de-age it a little bit. You know, if they're too powerful for, say, a young dragon, but too weak for an adult.
Yeah. Just have them fight ancients, man, until they win.
Yeah, just nothing but CR24s. That's what you get. I don't care that you're level 5.
Just fight them and win.
Yeah. Just do it, bro. Just do it. But yeah, Deck of Illusions, man. It's always been like this. Like I remember Deck of Illusions from second and third edition, and it's always been one of those things of where there are just no hard rules on how this thing works. And me as a DM, I personally love it because it does allow me the creativity to do things like what I'm talking about. You know, I am forced to sort of figure out the scenario because of it. But it's very anti 5th edition, because 5th edition has solid rules for just about everything. Yeah, it's that sort of interaction, the social interactions that 5e, just like every other edition, doesn't have a lot on.
The funny part about this illusionary deck is that I think it's in the basic rules.
Yeah, is it. It's in the Dungeon Master's Guide.
Yeah, so it should be one of those items that have a lot more work put into it and making sure there's no problems with using it, you know?
Yeah, like I think they just saw it in, you know, earlier editions and like, this looks cool, let's just bring this in. Oh, well, we're running out of space and, you know, we can't list everything on how this works. Just go with it.
Would love to know, like, their cost to page ratio for book releases.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see that too.
I mean, it's a super complicated formula, because you got to pay, each page adds weight, 100,000 times adds extra shipping costs and less space for books and boxes and all that. Like, it's complicated. You know, the logistics of it is very complicated.
Yeah,
but like.
But they're also ordering, you know, 50,000 books at a time or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know.
So you're getting a discount because of just mass quantity.
Yeah, so they have to have like, oh, one more page just to describe the rules would be great, guys. Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that extra page in the Dungeon Master's Guide to explain how the Deck of Illusions actually works within the set of rules is a problem. I mean, I personally love this thing because it does force the DM to get creative. You have to kind of figure out how this thing works, make stuff up, figure out how it actually interacts with all the creatures and everything. But at the same time, it really does not feel like it should be in 5e.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're probably right. It probably left it in vague just so the DMs can have to get creative.
Yeah,
be creative.
The vast majority of pretty much every item in the Dungeon Master's Guide has been around since at least second edition. Like, they've all been around. They didn't really change anything. Obviously, they've changed the wording and how some of the stuff works within the rules of 5e, but the items are mostly the same. I might have to go back and actually look at my third edition DM's guide and just go page by page to see which magic items made it over and what's new in 5e, if any.
You should go back to fourth edition and find what fourth edition has.
I can't. I don't own fourth edition.
There's this thing called the internet.
Yeah, well,
and there's a torrent of web pages out there that you could possibly find the PDF and do the compares.
I could, but I don't like 4th edition or care about 4th edition.
See, you can do a compare. Compare the edition that became the other one.
I mean, I could just compare the ones I have. That's all I... It doesn't even matter. This is a thing that I would be doing it for my own benefit, not because it actually matters. Not even... Hell, it wouldn't even be for my benefit. It would just be something to do it because I want to do it. And then we'd probably talk about it on the podcast. There is that.
Have you ever seen the magic item, Nolzer's Marvelous Pigments?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the one where you can paint onto the wall.
Have you seen the picture for it, though?
If it's in the 5e, I definitely have, yes.
It is.
Yeah, it's another one of those items that's kind of wonky.
Well, what's wonky about it to me is not what it does. What it does is fine. I get it. But the box, the image they have is like this little wooden box that has like two layers to it, like a top removable layer, and then like another layer with small compartments. And there's no pigments in the box. Okay. There's just a skull, a frog flower pot, a fish that looks like it's coming out of the water wanting bread, a strawberry, I think, and then like a sardine, a snake, a dead squirrel, a carrot, and a rose. Like, so maybe you can make pigments out of those colors, but like none of those things are pigments.
Yeah, that, well,
like, I'm thinking like a makeup kit is what I'm thinking.
It sounds like they're using the it's a picture of what's already been painted with those pigments, not the pigments themselves.
But the fish is looking at me weird, and I don't like it.
Quit looking at it. Don't look back. It'll stare into your soul. Yeah, let me go ahead and read this item, since we've already talking about it and got it pulled up. So it's typically found in 1d4 pots inside a fine wooden box with a brush weighing a pound in total. These pigments allow you to create three-dimensional objects by painting them in two dimensions. The paint flows from the brush to form the desired object as you concentrate on its image. Each pot of paint is sufficient to cover 1,000 square feet of a surface, which lets you create inanimate objects or terrain features, such as a door, a pit, flowers, trees, cells, rooms, or weapons that are up to 10,000 cubic feet. It takes 10 minutes to cover 100 square feet. When you complete the painting, the object or terrain feature depicted becomes a real, non-magical object. Thus, painting a door on a wall creates an actual door that can be opened to whatever is beyond. Painting a pit on a floor creates a real pit, and its depth counts against the total area of objects you create. Nothing created by the pigments can have a value greater than 25 gold. If you paint an object of greater value, such as a diamond or a pile of gold, it looks authentic, but close inspection reveals it to be for paste, bone, or some other worthless material. If you paint a form of energy, such as fire or lightning, the energy appears but dissipates as soon as you complete the painting, doing no harm to anything. So from that description, everything you just, not everything, but the vast majority of stuff you described, you couldn't even paint with this. Like the fish, you can't even paint living creatures with this. Like, what else was in that?
A skull, a frog, a fish, a strawberry, a snake, a sardine, a squirrel, a carrot, and a rose.
Yeah, so like at least half of the stuff you named, you couldn't even make with these pigments.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
Yeah, it's weird. Plus the door, like, this is what I say. This is another one of those squirrely items. Okay, I could paint a door. When I'm done painting the door and I open it up, does it actually let me go through into the next room? What if the wall is 100 feet that I'm trying to paint through? Yeah, and open that door. Does that door just open up into more wall?
Maybe.
Yeah, it's dumb. I don't think I've ever handed this object out, and I probably never will just because of that. Like, this is...
No, because I know exactly what I would do, is I would basically paint on the ground a giant volcano top. And all of a sudden, there's a volcano there. I'd paint a black hole.
Well, yeah, maybe. Inanimate objects or terrain features. But it doesn't say it would create lava.
No, if it created a form of energy, that's fire or lightning. The energy appears but dissipates as soon as you complete the painting. But yeah. if you paint a hole that goes down to the center of the earth.
Well, it won't. It'll go down to up to 10,000 cubic feet. I'm not doing the math for that. I don't know how far that is.
Werewolf Alpha, tell me how deep it is.
Yeah. So, this is another one of those holdover items. And it allows players to get super creative, but it also stresses the hell out of the Dungeon Master trying to figure out what the hell to do with this.
Yeah, I don't know.
So what are the... Let's think of some of the stupidest objects you could paint.
Oh, it'd only be like 1 foot. No, so if you made a cube that is 1 foot in length by 1 foot in width, it'd be 10,000 feet deep.
Yeah. Yeah, well, 100 square feet is 10 by 10.
Right. So if you do a 1 by 1 by 10,000... That's 10,000 cubic feet. So it'd be 10,000 feet deep.
Yeah, if it was 1 foot wide. But if it's 10, then it would be, what, 100 feet deep, I think?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, that's a pretty good fall, even in D&D. That's decent. It's not going to kill anybody over fifth level, but you know.
Right, so at most you need to have a 5 foot by 5 foot hole. And
it's 200 feet deep, if my math is correct. Don't you love playing D&D, kids? We learned to do math.
400 feet deep.
Which doesn't matter, because after 100 feet, you're at terminal velocity and you don't take anything extra.
So you just draw a whole bunch of different 5 foot by 5 foot by...
You could actually, well, I found a good use for this, is you could build you a house.
Yeah.
You could just make you a house.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, what you do is you just get some, some canvas or some fabric or whatever, hang it up where you want your house to be. Paint the house on that fabric, bam, you have a house, even though you weren't legally allowed to put it on that property. Now you're a squatter.
You can make 400 foot deep, five foot by 5 foot pits with this. Yeah.
I don't think that's the best use of it, but.
I mean, that's a lot of damage.
Yeah. Oh, here's the other stupid thing. So making a house with it, because you can't make anything with a gold piece value greater than 25 gold pieces. But you've made a house. Might be made out of paste, bone, or some other worthless material, but it's still there.
Made out of guano. No, guano's expensive. Sand.
I think we could literally just do a podcast about nothing except bad magic items.
Yeah, probably.
I'm sure we could.
So let me tell you about this idea I have called the peasant cannon.
I think we've talked about this before.
We have.
Yeah, I know we have. So peasant railgun.
So I did want to talk a little bit about the Dungeons and Dragons movie.
Go ahead. I know what you're going to say, but go for it.
So I linked you an article earlier in the week about the movie being delayed.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to read it?
I didn't read the article, but I've seen the meme running around about it.
Well, hold on. Let me read you the actual article, and this is from movieweb.com. Okay. So hold on. I'm ready to go. All right. Paramount's new Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves has had its release date pushed back by 4 weeks, with Deadline reporting that the film is now eyeing a late March 2023 release. The latest attempt to bring the fantasy role-playing world to life out on the big screen will be looking to avoid the fate of the 2000 movie starring Jeremy Irons, which was a massive flop. Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves brings an ensemble cast together, and while that doesn't always lead to success at the box office, it usually doesn't hurt either. Chris Pine is joined by Michelle Rodriguez, Bridgestone star Reggae Jean Page, Sophia Lilly, Justice Smith, and Hugh Grant, who will take the role of the movie's villain. When reached for comment, director Jonathan Goldstein stated that we are trying to stay as faithful to the core of what Dungeons and Dragons means to its players, and bringing it faithfully to the screen. So we are delaying the movie's release 4 weeks because of scheduling conflicts. He continued with more comments concerning delays, like, we've pitched a few additional ideas with Paramount by possibly delaying the film's start in theaters till an hour after the scheduled time of the film's start, and digitally removing critical PC characters from the film at different theaters to simulate a player not showing up for the game night. We've reached out to Chris Pine for further comment, and he was mainly focused on not wearing shoes and talking about his directorial debut of his UK film, Pool Man.
Yeah, that was basically kind of what the meme was saying. I mean, the fact they wrote an article like that.
No, I wrote that.
Oh, you wrote that. Okay. I wrote that. Okay, well, the meme was basically, talk about using a power move to show that you understand exactly what Dungeons and Dragons is by pushing it back and making everybody late, or making the whole thing late. Yeah, no, that's especially with scheduling conflicts.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it actually is a schedule conflict because it is a schedule conflict. Creed 3 was announced to release that same weekend. Mm-hmm. Okay. And while Creed 3 and Dungeons and Dragons is different demographics, it kind of isn't at the same time. And Creed 3 will beat Dungeons and Dragons if people have to choose between the two.
I honest to God seriously doubt it.
I don't think so. I mean, Creed 3, you got two major people that are headlining that film right now.
Yeah.
And the week before, I believe, was the release of Ant-Man and the Wasp, but then the third movie. That would be the second weekend for Ant-Man and the Wasp and Creed 3 coming out. So
Ant-Man and the Wasp. Okay. If it was Creed 1 or 2, I would probably agree with you. But I really and truly think the Dungeons and Dragons movie, and this is, I don't fucking know, but I think it will do very, very well beating out Creed 3 in the box office. Because
don't think any film that has Jonathan Majors right now is going to flop.
Oh, no, I am not saying Creed 3 is going to flop. That is not what I'm saying.
I think people will go see will see Jonathan Majors in anything he's in right now.
I don't even know who that is, by the way.
Jonathan Majors is the guy that's playing Kang.
Oh, okay. I know who I know Michael B. Jordan. I know who he is, but yeah. I never even heard the other guy's name until now. So
you need to check out some of the Men's Fitness magazine photo shoots that Jonathan Majors did. The man put on 25 pounds of muscle to play this role in this film.
So he's the guy playing opposite of Creed, sort of the villain.
Yeah
he is. That guy's huge.
Yes. Like he went from playing Kang, in Loki.
Where he was almost kind of tubby in the, at least in the face.
Tubby
he was.
And scrawny.
Yeah.
Lost all the weight, put on 25 pounds of muscles, became the biggest thing on the face of the planet. And
that is literally a year's worth of working out. He didn't do that quickly.
It wasn't 1 year. It took him 1 year.
Yeah, because I know it, like, I was watching a thing on Thor 3, and Chris Hemsworth was talking about when he got, you know, the part to play Thor. He literally spent a year of his life just getting into shape to look like that.
Yeah. I saw an article stating that Hugh Jackman said that he's not getting into prime Wolverine shape for his appearance in Deadpool 3.
They could CGI him if they need to.
They'll CGI if they need to be. He says, I'm 54. I'm too old to do this again.
Yeah. So. I mean, I'm sure he's... I've seen him. He's still in good shape, at least. So.
Yeah. No, we don't care. You just show up.
That's all we show care up, about. Man. That's all we care about.
The movie was delayed. That's the only big D&D news, but... I get it, because I wouldn't want my D&D movie going up against these blockbuster hits.
Sure. It is a thing that they really can't afford to fail with. No. Because they want to franchise this thing. They want to make a lot of money off of D&D as an IP. And if this movie bombs, well, that's probably over with. But I don't think it's going to.
No, it'd make a good Netflix show, but
I would love to see that. What company's putting this thing out anyway? Do you know?
Paramount.
Paramount. They have their own website. They have their own streaming service. Yeah, like I've watched a lot of Beavis and Butthead on there.
They keep making new Picard seasons for some reason.
I mean, I watched the first two; they were pretty good.
It's not about they're good. He's old.
He is old. Yes.
He needs to retire.
He's not ready to, man. What if all you've done is acting, then that's what you're going to keep doing. I don't just stop D&Ding because I'm old.
Acting.
But yeah, like, I would love to see a D&D show on there.
Yeah. So, I'll be interested in that. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Hopefully the movie does well. I know I'm going to be there on opening night to go see it.
Yep. I'll probably get like a little party together of people who want to go see it, and see it once by myself and then once with everybody else.
Yeah, I don't go to the theaters very often with groups of friends, but for this one, I probably will. And like me and all my D&D players, we'll go see it together, and then I'll go see it later on with my brother, which is what I normally do. Like me and him, we tend to go to the movies all the time.
I'd like to see them release like a little like campaign PDF to go along with the movie.
I wouldn't be surprised if they do release something like that. I mean, they're already releasing dice links. There's going to be so much merchandise they release based on this Dungeons & Dragons movie. Having a little campaign, something, maybe kind of like the Stranger Things release that they did a while back, something like that.
Maybe.
Well,
I was actually just about a second ago, I was about to say, what toy company is signed up to produce the D&D toys for the movie? And I was like, oh yeah.
All right.
I'm an idiot.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Hasbro, the company that owns D&D.
But I haven't seen much in the way of toy lines. I know they have the figures. I've seen those. I'm looking at them right now.
Yeah, with figures for the characters from the movie?
For the characters from the movie, yeah.
I actually haven't seen those. Link me.
Well, there's a link. But they don't look anything special. They just look, I think, are they G.I. Joe scale?
They look bigger than G.I. Joe scale, but it's hard to say.
No, they look, if you look at the image of them in the box, they look
Oh yeah. Well, it's really there's not enough details to really and truly make out what.
Yeah. They might be G.I. Joe scale or smaller. If they're smaller, they better be like mini size so I can actually do it as minis, but I don't think they are.
Yeah. Looks like they didn't even release all of them. So you've got Michelle Rodriguez and Chris Pine, obviously, and Hugh Jackman, you know, the big famous actors, and then some wizard who I don't know who
that wizard's wearing the MacGuffin hat that they get.
Oh, the helm that they steal.
Yeah.
That Chris Pine paid.
I think it's the sorcerer wearing the hat.
Yeah, like I don't. I know there was talk about a sorcerer, like a sorcerer on their team or something of that nature, but I don't remember ever seeing them really in the trailer.
He's there. You got to look for him, and you can find him.
I watched a bunch of the interviews they were doing. I remember there being a guy there, but the trailer primarily focuses on the main character.
It's the same guy that did. It's the same guy that was in the Detective Pikachu movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we talked about him. I never saw that one, but I do remember us discussing it when we were talking about the movie.
He's the sorcerer.
The sorcerer.
Sorcerer.
Oh yeah, there it is. Simon the sorcerer. Really?
Yeah.
Played by Justice Smith. Okay.
Have you seen the Pokemon movie? He was pretty good in it.
No, I never did.
You need to watch the Pokemon movie. It's really great.
I don't know anything about Pokemon. I've never...
You don't need to.
Seen it. I've never played it.
Actually, in fact, knowing Pokemon probably detracts from the movie. Like, if they were to call this movie, like, you know, Monster Detective or some shit like that, and you watch it, it's cool. It's honestly, it's a very good movie. I highly recommend it. I've seen it like 4 times.
Wow. Does your kid like it, or did you just like it that much that you watched it 4 times?
I think me and my wife saw it twice in the theater, and then we've seen it like on streaming shows and stuff. It's not a movie for kids, technically.
Technically. I mean, it's
PG, PG-13, I think.
Oh, okay.
But it's a live action film.
Yeah, no, I've seen the trailers and everything for it, and I think I started watching it, got like 5 minutes into it, and then turned it off. Wasn't there some kid trying to capture a Pokemon that almost ate him or something at the very beginning of the movie?
That's like all Pokemon, but yeah.
Okay.
You need to get past the opening, the credits of the film, man.
I'm ADD, man. If it doesn't hook me immediately, it's hard. It could be rough.
Well, I mean, it's got the Davy Jones guy in it.
Davy Jones? Like the singer from the 70s?
No. What's his name?
Oh, that's right. Yes, I remember us talking about this. The one from the movie with Johnny
Pirates
Depp.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean. That Davy Jones.
Yeah. I like that guy. Everything he's in is great.
All right, well, I don't think I have any more
Underworld
D&D talk. Oh, I do like Underworld. I was watching something.
He's the head vampire of Underworld.
Oh, that guy. Okay.
He was in Shaun of the Dead.
I saw that once.
As Shaun's mom's new boyfriend. He's in all of those movies. So he was in Hot Fuzz. He was the police chief in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, never saw that one.
You've never seen Hot Fuzz?
No, Shaun of the Dead didn't really thrill me. So after that, I was like, probably not going to watch these.
Hot Fuzz is a very different movie.
Yeah, but it's still the same cast. Yeah, that'd be like watching the first one of the Broken Lizard movies and realizing you didn't find it funny and then going and watching the others. Like, why would I do that? If I didn't like the first one, why would I like any of the other stuff these guys are putting out?
Because they're very different movies. One is a zombie survival movie, and the other one is a detective cop movie. And it's like if they were to take... what was the movie with Jackie Chan and Chris Rock? Not Chris Rock, but Chris Tucker.
Not Shanghai Noon, but that was Owen Wilson. Shit, and I was watching it. I literally watched
Rush
the movie.
Rush Hour. It would be like if you have Rush Hour in Brit.
I watched Rush Hour 2 like last week.
you would like Hot Fuzz. It's a very different movie. All the movies that they do are very different.
Is Chris Tucker in it?
No. It's the same cast. They just play very different roles.
Disappoint me.
And then you Chris have to Tucker watch the movie like 6 times to
find it
catch
funny.
Everything. No, catch everything.
Yep.
Anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of a slow week for D&D, so not
Let's
a
talk
whole
about
lot.
UFC next.
No, I think our listeners would flee if I started talking about something that only I know anything about and you don't.
Yeah, if you say anything more about UFC, I'm disconnecting.
So did you watch the fights recently?